You're listening to Not Many of You Should Become Teachers, a podcast that explores the world of K-12 education as it intersects with the Christian faith. You might call us extreme moderates. We're skeptics who try not to be cynics, who desire to see Christian educators dive deeper in their vocation. Welcome to the show. Hey everyone, it's Riley here. Welcome to another episode of Not Many of You Should Become Teachers. In this episode, you'll hear a presentation that Dave and I gave at an upper-level education class at Trinity Western University. The class was on faith and learning, or how faith can intersect with our practices, how our beliefs inform what we do at an ankle level, or what we actually do in the classroom. We decided to share the many things we learned from interviewing Dr. David I. Smith on a previous episode, also the things that we had learned in his class and at his conference this past year, and the connections that we were able to make with our own curriculum, our own practice, as well as some other great thinkers such as St. Augustine and James K. A. Smith, also of Calvin University. We hope you enjoy this episode, and if you're looking for more, be sure to find our website at notmanyofyou.com and our Twitter at notmanyofyou. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy the presentation.
Awesome. Okay. I think after talking with Nina, I'm sure this sentence or this phrase that we bring our whole selves into the classroom is not something unfamiliar, probably something quite familiar, maybe something beaten to death. But in a lot of ways, this is kind of our thesis from a faith perspective. So if we had to put it into a nice, concise slide, that if curriculum is truly a lived experience, there is an inevitability that faith will play a role in our practice. So we bring our whole selves into the classroom. So what does it mean to teach using our whole self? And I thought I'd start just with a little bit more about my personal background, just what it looks like for me coming into this role. I'm in my third year in sixth grade and I'm loving it. But I did not intend to work at a Christian institution. I did my practicum at an inner city school in Surrey, and I felt really called to work with that clientele. I really enjoyed my practicum. That's where I was supposed to be. But long story short, my arm was twisted by a former teacher, colleague, and mentor to work here. And this is where I work now. And I kind of haven't looked back. And I really value my time here. But as I approached this giant brick Christian institution, this is not the right words, but I wanted to do it right. I recognize that we are here, that students pay tuition to come here for Christian education. It's not for better education. That's not like if we had to look at a vision statement, we look for competence and excellence. But a lot of people think that that's the goal, the end goal. And there's a lot of teachers that teach that way. And sometimes there's a lot of students that come to school that way. And I felt like, you know what, if I'm here, I'm going to try and teach as Christianly possible with that opportunity. But with that came discrepancies. So I think if I had to put a theme on this anecdote, is that sometimes there's a discrepancy between Christian educators who don't always care about teaching in a Christian way or care about what it means to bring your whole self into the classroom. Because sometimes a lot of teachers at the school I work at, sometimes we just like teaching nicely behaved students because we have a lot of those. Or on the other hand, some of the teachers that really do care about like what does it mean to be a Christian in the classroom are quite worldview obsessed, and they like what is right and what is wrong. And that's just a context and a culture of where I'm at. But I feel that tension and discrepancy. And then the second discrepancy I would have to talk about is just my own pet practice, that I am still regularly learning about what it means to recognize what my pedagogy says about my values and my worldview. We talk about that being how your ankles are connected to your head, that what I'm doing, what does it say about what I believe? So I have my students in rows, and someone came to me the other day and they're like, hey, COVID, we have to have our kids in rows. Like, don't you hate it? And I kind of was like, it's not been that bad. Like, it's been fine. And that's when I realized how much I love talking at my students and talking to them. And that shows how I imagine the classroom that way. And then sometimes also the speed at which I go through curriculum, it's kind of like, Riley, like, is that really how you imagine the classroom? What's going on? So I'm frequently convicted by my own, what I see in my classroom based on like, okay, what is actually going on up here? And in my heart, if we want to use head, heart, ankles. But Dave, did you want to chime in? Was there something you wanted to say about your own practice?
Yeah, I'll do this quickly. I know we got some stuff and then kind of back and forth, right? Interact with this a little bit. My world, and one of the things I love about what Riley and I started doing is because Riley's in the middle school, I'm in the high school. And so we were starting to talk about things that were at like various levels, like we wanted to be aware of that. And so I spend most of my days with teenagers, and I teach senior level, grade 11, mostly grade 12. So I spend a lot of time with like students who are about to graduate and go on to the next season of life. One of the things, and I know in this course, or at least in some part of your education, training, and journey, you talk about like classroom spaces and physical design and physical spaces. And one of the things that's become deeply meaningful to me is, and this speaks to bringing your whole self, is finding ways to have little tiny, like tangible, even tactile things that can become themselves part of the pedagogy, part of the teaching. And for me, I just found I always had a mug of coffee in my hand. And so I was told this coffee, all of that. And I had a student who, again, this is grade 12 context. And so they're looking at post-secondary and what are they going to do? I would always crack a joke about the afterlife. I believe in the afterlife, you know, life after Pacific Academy. And so this student brought a mug from a prospective university where they were thinking of heading to from the university bookstore. And so that I was like, oh, that's, well, thanks for that gift. That's wonderful. And I, you know, shamefully, not shamefully, it's like self-promoted that and started drinking from these mugs, and then more mugs started appearing. So I have this mug collection, my alumni mug collection from universities and colleges and all sorts of post-secondary places. I have 27 of them now. And then students come in and they look, and it just becomes this talking point with students. And so I crack a joke about, you know, don't take guidance, counseling, advice from me, because I said, take a look at the mugs. Oh, you see UBC or Trinity. I already have those mugs. You can't go there. You have to go somewhere else. Lighthearted, these types of things. But where I'm going with, I mean, it's fun. But one of the things I started to realize was there were students, and you have to recognize the context that everybody's in a context. This, again, a lot of our students go on to post-secondary, almost all of them. And some try and get into, you know, fairly prestigious and elite programs. And so those were the mugs that started appearing, right? Like the big schools and schools down in the US and like ones you want to have on your desk. And it led to some conversations with students, like current students who are sitting in my classroom. And one girl actually vocalized at one time, and she was going to be heading to a more local community college situation, and she was like, oh, you don't need a mug from that. And that was one of those moments where I was like, you know what, I'm putting, you know, local community college, I'll put it next to, you know, an Ivy League school mug. And there was sort of an equality there, and recognizing the journeys that people go on. One final thing I'll say, outside of the realm of teaching, I'm you know, interacting with other folks. I'm thinking of my local church community, and there was a high school student. I ended up sort of teaching. I was like, this is my day job, but you know, teaching like a sort of a young adults or a high school age kind of Sunday school class setting. And this student was a, you know, missionary kid, bit jaded, and found out that I worked at that red brick Christian school down the freeway. And she said, are you one of those Christian teachers? Or she said something like that. And I was like, there was something behind what she was saying. And it took a while to sort of pick at that and unpack that. And I won't go into all of that right now, but I know that there is perception and baggage associated with a lot of these, even these terms, the concept of worldview and the spaces that we go into. And so that has always resonated with me, not in a not in a contrarian, our podcast, we talk about, we'd be skeptical of things. We don't want to fall into cynicism. But to that question of, am I one of those, am I that kind of Christian's teacher? Which goes to show that there's a plurality of how we might view that and how we want to live into both a Christian identity, but then what it might mean to teach Christianly. So that's sort of where we're playing with this together, and we've had some fun making some episodes, and it's been great professional development.
Thanks, Dave.
Yeah,
sounds like a lot of people responded to the reading and listened to the podcast. So I'm not gonna retell what happened on the podcast, but I will just kind of give I think I'm just going to do a 7 minute. I'm trying to give you the 7 minute version, and then maybe we could land with some examples from curriculum and maybe see just a couple tangible examples of what this might look like. Right. You are all the your future teachers, your future educators. You're truly going to decide what this really looks like. And you can come collaborate with me and Dave one day, and we'll see what that looks like. But I'm going to try and, from what I've learned and from what I've read and what we've shared with you, let me see if I can give you kind of 7 minute version on what it means to teach from our whole selves and a faith perspective. Okay. First, Dr. Kim Franklin, what a wonderful article. What a wonderful person, an educator. She identifies that we could, there's nothing wrong with the term worldview. It's how we view the world. And that could be one way that we see our classrooms. We see things differently because we have beliefs and values. And that's simply what a worldview is. And Kim Franklin has pointed that out, but she also pointed out that worldview can be contentious, that it's often about what is right and wrong. It's often, as David Smith says, about the right doctrines. What are we supposed to believe? And what I find is that worldview is very frequently issue-centric. You would have heard in the podcast talking about, well, what is my Christian worldview on this scientific issue? Or what is my Christian worldview on this political ideology? So where that becomes such a narrow perspective for how we see the many things that go on in our classroom. So worldview can be helpful, but we're still grappling for language on how it is that we can really engage within the classroom. Another question we might ask ourselves is, what type of worldview? Are we talking about a Canadian upper class white worldview, perhaps? Are we talking about, what about a rural Ugandan Christian worldview? Are we talking about the same thing? So we might ask ourselves something like that. So I recognize the tension that Dr. Kim Franklin talks about, and that word orient that she mentions can be helpful, and I'll come back to that in a bit. But I'd like to mention that David I. Smith from Calvin University has done a lot of work in this area, and he's started to use new language aside from worldview that can be a little bit more helpful. And he talked a bit about it in the podcast, but I'll just show you this picture to kick things off. This is an exercise that David did with a class that I took with him, and he talked about how would you describe this picture to someone? If you were to look at it, what details would you point out? What's important to you? Would you mention colors? Would you mention the landscape? And then all of a sudden he said, well, would you mention the hot air balloon that you can't see? The one that this photo is being taken from. Would you mention that one? Or would you have just described it and assumed that they would have imagined the other hot air balloon? See, there are things that are sometimes seen or unseen that we see or imagine differently based on our values and beliefs or our preconceived ideas, because really this idea called social imaginary, and that would be a good term to write down if you're writing anything down, it tells us what's legitimate, and it also tells us what's legitimate in our classrooms. So as we imagine things like the other balloon, how do we imagine our curriculum? How do we imagine our classrooms and our students? Which brings me to using our ankles. And I'll just take a step back to see that if we imagine our classrooms differently, we can start to see what Dr. Kim Franklin was talking about, that we no longer are obsessed with issue-centric ideas and trying to get the right doctrine or right, wrong, whatever, but we can now start to orient ourselves towards what David Smith calls Christian virtues, Christian practices, Christian ideals, those sorts of things. And those take place at our head because we imagine them, but they manifest in our ankles, which I told you about my own convictions and my practice, seeing things that don't quite match. But we can start to think about what actually takes place in our classrooms and see about how that informs what we actually believe. So we live in British Columbia, or we are, maybe you are located in different places, but I will use the BC curriculum to demonstrate this, that we can, our lessons can orient students towards different things, and you don't need to necessarily have a devotional or share anything about doctrine. So for example, this is actually, this is a great example that in grade three language arts, students are supposed to be able to create stories and other texts to deepen awareness of self, family, and community. Now, when we do that, could that activity orient students towards an act of service? Could they write it to someone who's been marginalized and lonely? Is that not an act of Christian charity and benevolence and service? In addition to that, when we look at something like Science 6, I'm a grade six science teacher. In the podcast, you would have heard David Smith talk about a lot of Christian institutions like to tag on a biblical worldview, sort of like, this is what they're going to learn that's like biblical. I'm sure, I don't even know, Nina, maybe there's something that goes on in Trinity like that. But in science, if I'm supposed to actually have students like see that there is awe and wonder in God's creation, what does that look like in the classroom? David Smith says a lot of people think it will just happen. I'll teach about science, and then they'll know that there is awe and wonder in creation. But is there actually time to sit and maybe sit in silence to observe these things? I'm teaching Science 6 space after spring break, so I'm looking forward to maybe trying something like that. A couple more examples. Math. Oh my goodness, the amount of math problems that are about selfishness and greed. What is going on? So can we see that applying strategies to apply problems, could that contextualized situation have to emphasize generosity and charity? We're in a pandemic. What about having students calculate rolling out vaccines? Is there ways that problems to be solved with mathematics could be something that promotes health and well-being, new life, new creation, that sort of thing?
And Riley, there was a comment on the Padlet about this very thing of somebody, a student observed, we're all values educators, right? Like numeracy, literacy, and values are implicit. So that's exactly what you're saying. So somebody commented on that.
Yeah, I love that. And the connection that I really want to emphasize is that sometimes we're very good, and this is a curriculum course, right? We're talking about curriculum. This isn't one of your practicum courses. You'll get to that. But we often say we value things, and then we look at our classroom and say like, oh, I did not mean to imagine things that way. That happens to me all the time. It happened to me in my practicum all the time, because we get, teaching has a lot of variables. What are we supposed to expect? And then the last couple I'll mention here, social studies. Think about all the justice initiatives. How can we partner that with joy, caring for the poor in spirit? Can we take the perspective of stakeholders who have that are in issue, oh, let's use the curriculum, issues, developments, or events? What could that look like? And then the last one I didn't put in the slides, but David Smith talks all about languages. Languages or language learning is all about connecting with someone who's different than you. How can that be something that promotes a Christian community, diversity, those sort of things? So that's our ankles, our imagination, that sort of thing. Just quickly, some ways where we reveal our imaginations, like our students in rows, are they meant to just sit and listen? That says something about what the teacher believes. What's student-teacher relationship like? Forgiveness, something that's valued. Student voice valued when curriculum is delivered. What about evidence of learning? Are students meant to work with people? Maybe people who aren't just their friends. Is it communal, generous, merciful? And then what do assessment practices look like? Are there hard edges? How can we see that? And what would that say about our values and beliefs? As Dave said, values educators. Sorry, that was the Blitz version, but I'm going to hand things over to Dave just to talk a little bit about Dr. James K. A. Smith, also from Calvin University.
So I'll just bridge this very, very briefly with the values education, and thank you, Riley, for taking through those examples. So I didn't want to piggyback and repeat more examples, but actually have a sort of a bit of a through line for you folks to see that some curricular content in our designs, this feels more or is more visible. It feels more natural. But to suggest, and again, I sit in social studies, humanities world, that tends to be highly visible all the time, just by the very nature of what we're discussing, debating, students are grappling with, as opposed to other types of courses that it's there, much like the mountains aren't moving, but we got lots of mist and fog and cloud right now. Doesn't change the fact that it's there. It's still there. And so rounding out just our thoughts before we get to just some discussion and thinking through this together is just one other dimension, because behind all of this is like layer upon layer upon layer, is behind our curriculum design, of course, our worldview, social imagine, how we imagine the space, how we imagine issues and beyond, but it's also how we imagine the human person. And so that gets us into, again, realm of things like anthropology and sociology of what is it, what's a human person and human interaction. And so one resource, and I just want to sort of give, intellectual credit to where this comes from, is, James K.A. Smith, a whole bunch of Smiths, who wrote a book about 4 years ago called You Are What You Love. And the tagline, the spiritual power of habit, and that these things are something that are, they're cultivated and they're formed in us. So maybe just a quick reminder that this is not inherently future oriented for you. It's like, well, when I get into my classroom, when I get a teaching job somewhere, that it's who we are now and the cultivation of ourselves here and now, and asking these questions here and now. So I actually want to go to where that's sort of the contemporary book that speaks a lot. And it's just kind of a book plug. Riley, if you could go to the next slide, though, because I want to go way back in time to basically the intellectual tradition that James Smith is drawing from. And that is a 4th century North African bishop, theologian, Augustine of Hippo, Saint Augustine or what have you. And I appreciate he's Augustinian, because what he's saying about the human person is this idea of we're not primarily cognitive and intellectual, which might be why worldview-ish conversations sometimes get tripped up, or we find that it just doesn't jive with, doesn't click like smoothly and seamlessly with our lived experiences and our lived realities in the classroom. And I'm doing this because I teach history, and I don't want to be a chronological snob, right? That we sort of got this figured out now, because the ancients, Augustine is probably the most famous example, who spoke of not primarily being cognitive and intellectual beings, but actually being affective, emotive. And this goes back to the biblical tradition, right? The Old Testament, even about the seat of our emotions in the heart. And Augustine's most famous for that our hearts, we are restless until we find our rest in God, this restlessness. And that actually we have to attend to, and that's going to be one of our prompts just to consider with you folks, is how are we attending to or cultivating, or pick your analogy, to our own hope, like pick your word, hope, dreams, wants, desires, cravings, aspirations, for what you want to have transpire in the classroom and in and among with our students who were charged with and blessed to have, privileged to have. Right. I use the term, I try to always use the term teaching and learning at the same time. That's what I'm doing in a classroom. I, much like my mugs, I'm learning from students in the moment all the time. And so what are we doing to attend to, like, if orientation, back to, Dr. Franklin, orientation as opposed to just cognitive worldview stuff, it begs the question, and this is St. Augustine by way of James Smith, to say, how are those desires, wants, cravings, hopes being formed and shaped? And that is something that happened before we all entered into this Zoom, before you enrolled at Trinity. That's been a lifelong thing, but it's happening now in very intentional ways before we before you become, you know, legit educators, right? So that's kind of the point there. So yeah, Riley, you got the slide there.
Yeah, Nina, maybe if you could help us out here, but we thought that we'd take some time for a bit more discussion in those learning pods, which you have nicely set out, but we have a couple of prompts. Mm-hmm. To either discuss, like these are obviously, if these catch your attention, these could be something we could discuss. If there's something else on your mind, go for it. But the first one is to work backwards, to think of a memory of a former teacher. And what did their ankle level decision say about the way they imagined the classroom? Just an example I could give. When my students notice that I love rows, it's not that I love them, but they notice Mr. Derrick doesn't always like it when we talk. He likes to talk. What does that say about their imagination? And is there anything Christian about it? In your opinion, could be nothing, could be something. And then last, what Dave was talking about, what do you hope in your future classroom space? How are you attending even now to those desires? And we're, yeah, like he said, it happened before you came on the Zoom call. It will continue to happen, but that's where we're at.
Which plugs right back into that language of the whole self. You bring you into the classroom. So,
thanks for joining us for another episode of Not Many of You Should Become Teachers. Dave and I really enjoy being able to collaborate and talk with other people and to share what it is that we are learning. One of the biggest parts of this podcast is, well, we've talked about becoming advocates of faith and learning, but also recognizing that this is such a step in our own professional development and our own growth. If you are looking for opportunities to continue to collaborate or continue to grow, Dave and I are doing more presentations as this year progresses. This is one of numerous presentations that we'll be doing this year, both online and hopefully one day in person. But if that's something that you're interested in, please make sure that you get in contact with us. You can do that through Twitter at @notmanyofyou, or if you're an email person, we do have email at notmanyofyou@gmail.com. But all this information is on our website at notmanyofyou.com. So thanks again for listening. Hope you have a great day. Bye-bye.